to move in as soon as we were gone, coordinate the remaining functional ships as best she could, and use their combined tractor beams on the Judicator. You had a handful of light cruisers, tractor, a Star Destroyer? And it worked? They didn't need to move it very far, Thrawn said. Just far enough downward to reach an orbit that would take it out of the ion cannon's range. Once the attack was halted, the Judicator's power systems came up quickly enough for it to move away from Baton and out of danger.
Ah, Vanto said. I wonder if Durrell will acknowledge the Chirac's assistance.
It would be difficult for him to ignore it.
True, but I bet he'll try.
And after that, we were able to make running repairs on the engines and get out of range,
Durrell concluded his report.
His flickering holographic image is difficult to read, but his voice holds anger and embarrassment.
I apologize for my failure, Fleet Admiral Danasius, but now that I know what we're up against, my next assault will succeed. Perhaps,
Danasius said.
His holographic image turns to the third hologram floating over the Chimera's projector.
Admiral Kinshara, your report?
The insurgents at Dinash have been dealt with, Fleet Admiral,
Kinshara said.
His voice holds satisfaction at his success, and a more subtle satisfaction at Dural's failure.
There was little there, as it turned out. However, a preliminary prisoner interrogation suggests that a large portion of their ships and materiel may have already been transferred to Baton.
Excellent,
Durrell said.
His voice holds brisk confidence.
Oh, the barks in a single hound. That much easier to roll up the lot of them. Admiral Thrawn,
Danasius invited.
Salmon is likewise pacified,
Thrawn said.
Two enemy ships were destroyed, four ships captured. A considerable array of small arms ordnance was also captured.
Without your actual presence, I'm told.
Commander Pharaoh shifts her feet. Her usual confidence is muted. Her body stance holds discomfort.
The action was carried out under my direction, Admiral.
I see.
For a moment, Danasius continues to gaze at Thrawn.
Admiral Durrell, when will the 103rd be able to travel? We can re-engage in 30 hours, sir,
Durrell said.
His embarrassment is gone, his voice now holding anticipation.
I didn't ask when you could fight, Admiral,
Danasius said.
I asked when you could travel.
5 hours, perhaps,
Durrell said.
His voice holds certain caution.
Sir, with all due respect...
In 5 hours you are to bring your task force to the Marleyvane shipyards for repair,
Danasius said.
Admiral Thrawn?
Yes, Fleet Admiral.
You said you needed to gather intelligence on the Skrim Island insurgents. How much time will you need?
Sir, I must protest,
Durrell said.
His stunned disbelief transforms into outrage and wounded pride.
This operation was given to me. I'm perfectly capable of seeing it through. Admiral Thrawn,
Danasius repeated.
Actually, Fleet Admiral, the gathering is complete, Thrawn said. I can take back the island whenever you wish.
Good.
Danasius's image looks at Durrell, then back to Thrawn.
His voice holds satisfaction.
At your convenience, Admiral.
Chapter 25.
At one time or another, every warrior wishes to have an unconquerable fortress. Such a fortress is perceived as a refuge, a place of defiance,
or a rock upon which enemies can be goaded into smashing themselves to their own destruction. Politicians, too, yearn for such fortresses, though they envision them in terms of power and authority, instead of stone and weapons and shields. Industrialists wish to be similarly protected against competitors and marauders, while pirates hope for defense against system authorities. In one way or another, all people wish for ultimate safety. But ultimate safety does not exist. Those who trust in such will find that hope dashed upon the very rock behind which they seek to hide.
The captains had their orders. The ships of the 96th Task Force were in position. It was time.
All ships report in, Thrawn called from the center of the command walkway, making a final check, as he always did.
Eli smiled to himself.
For all of Thrawn's interest in observing and establishing his opponent's patterns, the Admiral had plenty of his own.
Interesting plan, Pharaoh murmured from Eli's side. At the very least, it holds the prospect of taking them by surprise.
Admiral Thrawn's plans usually do that, Eli murmured back.
So I've noticed, Pharaoh said. You've been with him a long time, haven't you?
Eli shrugged.
All my career.
Must have been nice, Pharaoh mused. Minds like his are few and far between. Too often the men and women in senior command positions are there because of who they know, rather than what they know.
Yes, I've served under my share of those.
As did Thrawn, I assume, Pharaoh said. It must have driven him crazy at times. Good thing you were there to keep him sane.
There's nothing special about me, ma'am, Eli said. In fact, I was on track to be a supply officer before he showed up.
Pharaoh shook her head.
That would have been a waste. You belong on the bridge, not the conveyor.
Not sure I agree, ma'am, Eli said, feeling a twinge of embarrassment. I certainly don't have the Admiral's genius for tactics.
Maybe not, Pharaoh said. But once the plans are explained, you understand them.
Eli had to smile. Once they're explained, ma'am, anyone can understand them.
You think so? Pharaoh countered. You really think all the captains and their senior officers out there in the 96th understand how this is going to work?
Of course, Eli said, frowning.
It's obvious. To you and to me, Commander, Pharaoh said. Not to everyone.
Eli stared at Thrawn's back, his brain automatically counting down the ship's acknowledgements as they came from the comm station. Was Pharaoh right? And if so, was that why Thrawn had manipulated Eli's career to keep him as his aide? Not as a punishment, or even on a whim, but to train him in the art of command?
The last ship reported in, and Eli saw Thrawn's back straighten a bit. It was time.
Very good, the Admiral said. Shyrak, Flensor, Tumnor, move in.
Hold position,
Pharaoh added quietly to the Chimera's helmsman. Eli took a breath, let it out slowly and silently, sending all three of the task force's light cruisers into harm's way was a terrible risk, one that most commanders would be hesitant to make. But it was the only way this plan would work. He frowned. Was Pharaoh right? Was Eli one of a relative few who could genuinely understand Thrawn's tactics?
The cruisers were moving inward toward the planet, their turbolasers firing at Scrim Island.
At the moment, it was a waste of effort. Even without the island's shield, the shots would have been mostly ineffective. But as the warships dropped lower and penetrated deeper into the stratosphere, the level of energy delivered would become progressively higher. Eventually, if the cruisers continued, the blast would begin to stress the shield and possibly overload the generator. Before that happened, the insurgents would have to make their move. They didn't wait until the situation became that critical, of course. The cruisers were still in the upper atmosphere when the shield contracted simultaneously from the entire shoreline, opening firing vectors for all three ion cannons.
"Ion cannons clear," Thrawn called. "Cruisers, fire at will."
The three warships shifted their targeting vectors from the center of the shield toward the new targets. It was, Eli thought, like a replay of Admiral Durrell's first attempt. But this time, something new had been added to the mix. Even as the cruiser's turbolasers hammered at the ion cannon emplacements, a fourth ion cannon opened fire from a position on the southeast shore. The Chirac spotted it and tried to shift its aim. But the ship's response time was too slow for that large and angular shift. And the hazy ion blasts shooting up from the surface were too fast. Before the cruiser's fire could track to its new target, the ion clusters splattered across its hull, knocking out sensors and silencing weapons. Before the Flenser and Tumnor could shift their own aim, the fourth cannon had sent a salvo at each of them as well, and their attacks also went silent. "So, the Admiral was right," Pharaoh commented. "They did have a fourth active cannon. Must have had a spare Cathtron tube when they first took the island."
"We've tangled with Night Swan before," Eli reminded her. "You learn not to take anything at face value."
"Cruisers, report," Thrawn called.
Eli listened closely as the reports came in. Night Swan was smart, all right, but he didn't know everything, including how tough even Imperial light cruisers were. All three ships had lost primary weapons and main drives, but their communications and some of their secondary weapons were still intact. Most important of all, so were their auxiliary drives.
"Final maneuvering," Thrawn ordered. "Flenser, now."
The Flenser began drifting to starboard. Thrawn watched it a moment, then gestured.
"Chirac, now."
In turn, the Chirac and the Tumnor moved casually to their assigned positions.
"What about that fourth ion cannon, Admiral?" Pharaoh asked.
"It will not be a problem," Thrawn assured her. "Captain Yelphis, the Tumnor took the last salvo. What were your observations?"
"The cannon was already sputtering, Admiral,"
Yelphis's voice came from the speaker.
"My engineering officer says that's the sign of a Cathtron tube emitter in the process of burning out. Whatever black market dealer they got it from, they were robbed."
"Given that his primary goal was to force us to withdraw and reevaluate, I would say its brief functionality was probably worth the cost," Thrawn said. "Fortunately, we are not so easily dissuaded. Commander Pharaoh, take us in."
Ahead, the planetary horizon rose a little higher as the Chimera shifted position. It moved in behind the three partially disabled cruisers, entering the stratosphere and moving ever closer to the surface.
"Northern ion cannon clear to fire,"
Flenser's captain warned.
"Compensate, Commander," Thrawn ordered.
"Compensated,"
Pharaoh confirmed calmly. Eli smiled tightly. The insurgents had seen the Chimera moving in and had hoped to take it out as they had the Judicator. But a small shift in the Imperial ship's positions had put the Star Destroyer directly behind the damaged cruiser.
"Commander?" Thrawn asked.
"Still moving inward, Admiral," Pharaoh reported.
"Western ion cannon clear to fire,"
Brenta reported from the Chirac.
"Adjusting. You're covered, Chimera."
"Thank you, Captain," Thrawn said. "All ships, continue as planned."
Pharaoh took a step closer to Eli.
"I wonder if they're getting worried yet," she murmured.
"I doubt it," Eli said. "Whoever they've got running things down there, he's clever enough to know that shadows work in both directions. If his ion cannons can't hit the Chimera, the Chimera's turbo lasers can't hit his ion cannons."
"What about the island's turbo laser?"
"He'll wait until we're closer," Eli said.
With only that one target still available to us, he'll assume we've already locked in on it. He won't want to open the shield until he's got his best chance at a kill shot.
As you said, a clever man, Pharaoh said. I almost feel sorry for him.
The island's three ion cannons continued with sporadic fire, clearly trying to get a shot past the cruisers to the Chimera. But Thrawn had positioned his ships well, and the four captains had followed their orders precisely. Each time the cannons fired, their bursts nearly expended themselves against the cruisers. The standoff couldn't last forever, of course. If the cannons continued to fire, the cruiser's systems would eventually become so frozen that the ships would have no power or mobility of any sort, and be unable to restart. At that point, they would begin the slow inward spiral that would ultimately send them crashing to the surface. Fortunately, that wasn't going to happen. The Chimera eased its way inward.
Optimal firing distance, Admiral, Pharaoh reported. Turbo laser standing ready.
Thank you, Commander, Thrawn said. Target one, turbo lasers, fire.
Through the viewport, Eli watched the sky light up as the brilliant green bolts hammered their way toward the planet below. But not to the island itself. As Admiral Durrell and Adjudicator had so painfully demonstrated, the insurgents' defenses were more than adequate to fend off any orbital attack. But Skryn was an island, and the ocean immediately off its shore was not under the protection of that shield.
Direct hit on target one coordinates!
A voice came from one of the 96-2 frigates, flying high observation over the battle zone.
Water crater! Implosion! Waves heading outward! Impact!
A voice shouted from the second frigate.
Tsunami scale waved has slammed into the western shoreline.
Target two, fire, Thrawn ordered. Damage at target one.
Unclear, Admiral,
the second frigate's observer said. The man was trying to stay calm and professional, but Eli could hear the awe creeping into his voice.
But the tsunami made a direct hit on the western ion cannon emplacement.
Report on target two,
the first frigate's observer cut in.
Turbo laser emplacement also hit. Looks even more swamped than target one. The ground must be level, or even bowl-shaped there.
Alternate fire, Thrawn said. Targets one and two.
Shield retracting,
the Flenser reported.
Turbo lasers clear to fire.
Second tsunami has hit target two,
the first observer called.
Second tsunami on target one,
the second added.
Western ion cannon is awash. Turbo laser.
He broke off.
Explosion at turbo laser emplacement, Admiral. Looks like the water shorted the capacitors. I'd say the weapon is out of action.
Calm open transmission, Thrawn ordered. Scrim Island, this is Admiral Thrawn, aboard the ISD Chimera. Lower your shield and surrender, or we will continue to inundate your heavy weapons and shore defenses until they have been destroyed and those operating them killed. Repeat, lower your shield and surrender, or be destroyed.
There was no response.
Do we continue firing, Admiral?
Pharaoh asked.
Alternate fire between targets one and three, Thrawn said. Alert the assault boats for imminent action.
Another burst of turbo laser fire sizzled from the Chimera into the now seething ocean.
Tsunamis on targets one and three,
the first observer reported.
Looks like a fire has started in the area around target two.
Sir, the shield is down,
the sensor officer called excitedly.
Looks like they're surrendering.
Confirm that, Admiral,
the comm officer added.
The insurgent leader is formally asking for terms.
Tell him he and his men are to leave their weapons in the buildings and wait outside for the assault boats, Thrawn said. Any attempts at further resistance will be met with deadly force.
He half turned to the crew pit, and Eli could see an especially harsh glitter in his glowing red eyes.
And tell him
he added quietly. That the cost will be severe if any of his hostages are harmed.
He waited for an acknowledgement, then turned and walked back along the command walkway to where Eli and Pharaoh were standing.
You may signal Coruscant with news of our victory, Commander Vonto, he said. Once the island has been fully retaken, Commander Pharaoh, you will oversee the task of tractoring the three cruisers safely out of Baton's gravity well, so that they may initiate repairs.
Eli nodded.
Yes, sir. Yes, Admiral, Pharaoh said. And may I add my congratulations. A brilliant plan, perfectly executed. An outstanding victory.
Victory, Commander. Thrawn shook his head. This battle is over, but the war for Baton has not yet been won.
He turned and looked back along the walkway.
Should I be needed, I will be in my cabin. Inform me when the island has been secured.
Have you ever been aboard an Imperial Star Destroyer, Governor?
Yularen asked, as his corvette rode the docking tractor beam into the Chimera's hangar bay.
No, I haven't had the privilege, Colonel, Arinda said.
In point of fact, she'd never even seen one of the massive ships this close, let alone been invited aboard one. But ships were ships, men were men, and admirals, even ones who'd risen as rapidly through the ranks as Thrawn, were still just admirals. She'd handled her share, she would handle this one. Thrawn was waiting when Arinda and Yularen emerged from the docking tunnel.
Governor Bryce, the Admiral greeted her. Colonel Yularen, welcome aboard.
Thank you, Admiral, Arinda said.
Commander Vanto was standing a few steps behind him, along with a woman wearing a commander's insignia plaque.
We appreciate you seeing us on such short notice.
Especially considering how busy you obviously are,
Yularen added.
But I think this meeting may prove worthwhile.
We shall see, Thrawn said. The conference room is this way.
The conference room, when they finally reached it, turned out to be little more than a pilot's briefing compartment. The refreshments that had been laid out were plain and perfunctory, probably from the same pilot's mess. Thrawn hadn't introduced his subordinates either. Fortunately, both Arinda and Yularen already knew Vanto, and the other woman, by default and rank, had to be Chimera's captain, Commander Pharaoh. Mentally, Arinda shook her head. After all this time, Thrawn still didn't have a solid handle on the political requirements of his position.
We understand you've pinpointed the insurgents' main Baton stronghold,
Yularen said, as they sat down around the table.
The Creekpath Mining and Refining Complex outside Paragosto City.
Yes.
Thrawn's eyes flicked to Vanto.
While the freighters that fled from Scrim Island landed in different locations on the continent, Commander Vanto was able to sort out shipping vectors that indicated their cargoes ultimately ended up in Creekpath.
Arinda felt her stomach tighten.
And, of course, you're planning to go in there in force.
I don't see that we have a choice, Governor, Commander Pharaoh said. The complex's shield blocks orbital assault.
Even if it did not, there are approximately 30,000 civilians within the complex's boundaries,
Thrawn added.
Yes, I know, Arinda said. Two of those civilians are my parents.
Those disturbing red eyes narrowed. I see.
Which is not necessarily all bad,
Yularen said.
Governor Price has, for obvious reasons, been following events on Baton very closely. 2 days ago, she came to me with a proposal.
He gestured.
Governor?
It's very simple, Admiral,
Arinda said, slipping her voice, expression, and body language into what she liked to call persuasion mode.
I visited my parents several times when I worked for Senator Ranking. I know some of the people down there, and my parents probably know most of them. I want to go down there, reacquaint myself with my parents and their friends, and get a close-up look at the insurgents' defenses and weapons set up.
That way, when you send in your forces, they won't go in blind.
Depending on the setup, they might even get a crack at the shield generator,
Yularen pointed out.
Taking that down would make this operation considerably easier.
Yes,
Thrawn said, eyeing Orinda closely.
A question. When you last visited Baeton, you were a senator's aide. Now you're an imperial governor. Your position and reputation may precede you.
They won't,
Orinda said.
I can wear a disguise, but the simple fact is that for most people, expectations override observations. They won't be expecting to see Governor Price of Lothal, so they won't see her.
Your parents will know.
For a second, Orinda flashed back to that terrible day on Lothal. The day she'd had to tell her parents that they would have to leave their home, maybe for years, maybe forever. She'd talked long and hard during those 3 hours, cajoling and arguing, extolling the opportunity they were being given, while warning of the dangers if they refused Ranking's offer, promising she would help in the future, while conceding she was helpless in the present. In the end, she'd persuaded them, and they'd moved to Baeton, eventually settling into their new life with reasonable comfort and contentment. But it was Orinda who'd persuaded them. Not Ranking and his threats, but Orinda.
Don't worry about them,
she assured Thrawn.
I'll make sure they keep quiet.
I assume you're not going alone,
Banto put in.
Of course not,
Orinda said, though that was, in fact, exactly what she'd been hoping to do. She'd argued long and hard with Yularen before ultimately being forced to concede the point.
One of Colonel Yularen's men will go with me.
The story will be that they're hunting down a friend who's gotten mixed up in the mine situation,
Yularen said.
That gives them a reasonable excuse to come into a potential combat zone, and to persuade her parents to get her past the insurgent checkpoints.
It also does not require her to take either side in the dispute,
Thrawn said.
All to the best, since we do not know which side her parents support.
Orinda felt her lip twitch. She hadn't thought about that point.
I'm sure they're loyal to the Empire.
Perhaps, Thrawn said. Night Swan is quite persuasive. I must also point out that even with an ISB escort, this will be a dangerous undertaking.
I'll be fine,
Orinda insisted.
More important, you need the information.
The collecting of which you're hardly an expert on, Pharaoh pointed out. It seems to me that limits your value.
Orinda had to smile at that.
If Pharaoh only knew how good she was at collecting information. One, Agent Gundry is trained in those things, she said. He knows how to pull up the raw data. Two, I know mines, mining, and refining. I'll know what equipment is supposed to be in those facilities and what isn't, and what's worth tagging for orbital destruction and what isn't. Between his gathering and my sifting will be a very effective team.
She looked at Thrawn.
The most effective, I dare say, that you can get on such short notice.
Thrawn eyed her a moment, then shifted his gaze to Yularen.
Do you vouch for this Agent Gundry, Colonel?
Absolutely, Yularen said. He's highly competent, both as an investigator and as a protector. He'll keep her safe. Count on it.
Thrawn was silent another moment. Then he gave a microscopic nod.
Very well. How do you intend to get her to the mine?
I'll take her to Denagra and put her and Gundry aboard the regional planet hopper,
Yularen said.
They'll come into Paragosta City like any other visitors.
I see,
Thrawn said. He still had his doubts, Orinda could tell, but he also knew he had limited power over what an Imperial governor did, especially when that governor already had ISB's blessing.
Time frame.
We can have her to Dinagra and back to Baton in 12 hours.
Yularen glanced at his chrono.
That should get her to Creek Path about 2 hours before sunset local time.
He nodded behind him.
From the looks of your light cruisers, I doubt you'd be ready to take any action before then anyway.
Arinda pursed her lips. Yularen was right on that score, certainly. Their corvette had passed close to one of the cruisers on their way in, and the damaged ship's entire flank was a solid mass of maintenance tugs and huge repair barges. From what they'd seen of the other two cruisers, positioned far from the Chimera where they'd be out of the way of any firefights, those weren't in any better shape.
The cruisers were more heavily damaged in the ion cannon attack than was first thought,
Thrawn conceded.
Still, their state of repair is largely irrelevant, as they would be of little use in a ground assault.
Unless Night Swan also has a space component to his plan,
Yularen warned.
Remember that Admiral Kinshara reported most of the insurgent ships had already left Denash when the 125th arrived.
That report merely repeated the statements of his prisoners,
Thrawn reminded him.
The presence or number of insurgent ships that were in the system has yet to be independently confirmed.
Maybe,
Yularen said.
You'll still want to keep a close watch on the sky.
I always do, Colonel,
Thrawn assured him with a small smile.
For the record, I disapprove of Governor Price's plan, on both safety and effectiveness issues. However, as I'm sure she is prepared to remind me, Baton and Paragosto City are not yet considered full military zones, which limits my authority over her movements there.
And yet, disapproving or not, I know I can count on your instant assistance if there's trouble,
Arinda said. Her long years of political combat had taught her that being gracious in victory never hurt.
For that, Admiral, I thank you.
Thrawn inclined his head to her.
Governor.
He looked at Yularen.
Will you be returning to the Chimera after you take Governor Price and Agent Goodry to Dinagra?
Sadly, I have urgent business elsewhere,
Yularen said.
But I trust we'll meet again soon.
I look forward to it,
Thrawn said.
You will provide the comms and data collectors that Governor Price and Agent Goodry will need?
Yes, and I'll coordinate with Commander Vanto on frequencies and passcodes,
Yularen said.
Very well.
Thrawn again inclined his head to Arinda.
Success with your mission, Governor. Be cautious and be safe.
And bring back useful data,
Yularen added.
Better yet, see if you can take down the shield. Make things a lot simpler.
Don't worry,
Arinda assured both of them.
We'll do our best.
And the passcodes will decrypt anything they send back,
Yularen said, handing Eli a data card as they walked toward the hangar bay.
Thank you,
Eli said, slipping the card into his data pad and giving it a quick check. Everything seemed to be in order. I presume you want this kept isolated from the rest of the ship's computer system?
If possible,
Yularen said.
It's one of ISB's best encryptions, and we really don't want it wandering around the galaxy by itself.
Understood,
Eli said, pulling the card from his data pad. The docking tunnel entrance was just ahead, and Governor Price had already drawn away from the others, picking up her pace as she headed toward it. She really was anxious to get this mission started. Admiral Thrawn's already been in contact with the Imperial forces on the ground. They'll be ready to move if and when Governor Price and her escort find them a soft way in.
Yes,
Yularen said, his voice going subtly odd.
Governor, go on in and get settled. I need a quick word with Commander Vanto.
Price sent a slightly puzzled look over her shoulder, but disappeared into the tunnel without comment.
A problem, Colonel? Eli asked quietly.
I don't know, Ularin said. Can you tell me who set up the positioning of the Chimera and the rest of the task force?
I believe the Admiral did that himself. Why?
Because it's decidedly non-standard, Ularin said. In fact, it's borderline insane.
He gestured.
Your three light cruisers are at the corners of an equilateral triangle, nearly 100 kilometers on a side. That means they're not only too far from your flagship, but too far from one another. None of them can support the others, and none of them are within covering range of the Chimera.
They're not exactly fit for battle at the moment, Eli said.
Still, he'd wondered about the placement himself. Thrawn's explanation had been that he wanted plenty of space around each of the cruisers so that the huge and bulky repair barges he'd brought into the system from somewhere wouldn't get in one another's way. But was that an explanation? Or was it simply an excuse?
Their lack of combat capability is precisely my point, Ularin said. As I said, they can't support the Chimera, and the Chimera can't support them. They're basically belly-up turtles, surrounded and hemmed in by other belly-up turtles. A few armed ships popping out of hyperspace, and you'll be down by one cruiser and a whole lot of support ships. Three forces attacking in unison, and all three ships and support clusters would be gone.
Not in unison, Eli murmured. They'd come in sequence. Shyrak, then Flenser, then Tumnor. They want to give the Chimera just enough time to turn its turbolasers toward one cruiser before the second was attacked.
I see you're learning to think tactically, Ularin said. The question is, why isn't Thrawn doing the same?
I'm sure he is, Eli said.
But Ularin was right on all counts.
Which left only one reason Eli could think of why the cruisers had been set that far away. They were Thrawn's equivalent of traffic zags. Something to slow down a sneak attack by encouraging the raiders to deal with a tempting trio of outlying ships while the Chimera came to full combat readiness. Only the bait was helpless, which meant that any attack would instantly degenerate into a slaughter. Eli felt his throat tighten. Thrawn wouldn't do something that cold-hearted. Surely he wouldn't.
Well, I for one can't see the logic in this one, Ularin said darkly. But I suppose that's his business, not mine. All I'm saying is that you should keep an eye on things. Night Swan, I've had the feeling ever since that first Tabana gas encounter that the man's gotten under Thrawn's skin. Deeper, probably, than the Admiral would ever admit. With him orchestrating this whole thing, I'm not at all sure how clearly Thrawn's thinking.
He's thinking just fine, Eli said firmly. And whatever he does, it'll be for the good of the Empire.
I hope so, Ularin said. Keep an eye on him anyway.
With a final lingering look behind them, Ularin headed into the tunnel, leaving Eli alone in the passageway, with new and disturbing thoughts. He waited until the Corvette was safely on its way. Then, fingering Ularin's data card, he headed for the bridge. He would watch Thrawn all right. He would watch everyone. Because Night Swan was somewhere in the area, with some plan of action already in place. And as Thrawn himself had pointed out, the man was quite persuasive.
Chapter 26
Each person has goals. Some of those goals are open, visible to all who care to observe. Others are more private, shared only with one's closest friends or associates. Some are dark secrets that one hopes will never see the light of day. But eventually, inevitably, Those deepest goals must be made manifest if they are to be reached. They must be opened for someone to hear or see or offer assistance. Everyone who brings those goals into the light must be prepared for either acceptance or rejection. And he must be ready to bear the consequences. All of them.
Back aboard the Chimera, Thrawn had said that Paragosto City wasn't yet a full military zone. If it wasn't, Arinda had no interest in tackling the real thing. The first gauntlet was at the spaceport, where everyone leaving the transport had to show ID and answer some questions on their purpose for visiting Baetan in general, and Paragosto City in particular. After that was the Baetan Defense Forces, soldiers, and Navy troopers who'd set up a roadblock on the main road leading from the city to the Creek Path mining complex. It didn't look like they'd set up a full cordon yet, but Arinda guessed it was just a matter of time and numbers. And finally, there was a checkpoint just under the edge of Creek Path's shield, this one guarded by what appeared to be a mixed group of insurgents, malcontents, excitement seekers, and flat-out paid-for mercenaries and would-be mercenaries. But the IDs that Ularin had given them, partial real name and fake planetary address for Arinda, fake everything for Gudry, did the trick, bolstered by some amazingly good patter from Agent Gudry. Arinda had expected to have to carry that load. Clearly, Ularin hadn't been overstating Gudry's abilities. "You did very well, Governor," Gudry murmured as they headed for a line of four-seater personnel transports just inside the last checkpoint. "Better than I expected."
"I'm glad I met with your approval," Arinda murmured back. "We'll start with my parents' house, then head into the mine area for a look around."
"We only needed your parents to get in," Gudry said. "We're in."
"We're only in past the barricade," Arinda pointed out. "Not into the mine complex itself."
"Not a problem," Gudry said. "Anyway, I want to see what's going on before it gets dark."
Arinda closed her fingers around his upper arm.
"One, don't be an idiot," she said, lowering her voice. "My father's a foreman, and my mother's an administrator. Having a familiar face along will get us past checkpoints or security patrols a lot easier than ISB bluster talk. Two, a mining facility is as bright at night as it is in the daytime. It's just the shadows that move to different places. And three, since by-the-book Imperials like to attack enemy positions in the dark, sundown will draw the insurgents' attention outward. Night is exactly what we want."
Gudry was silent another couple of steps. "Fine," he growled. "We'll do it your way. For now."
"We'll do it my way,"
Arinda agreed.
"For always."
Her first fear was that her parents might have been shifted to a different work schedule. That would have entailed hunting them down or risking a comm call. To her relief, her mother answered the door on the second ring.
"Yes?"
she said cautiously. She looked back and forth between them, her eyes settling on Gudry.
"What can I do for you?"
"You could start with a hug,"
Arinda suggested. Elenia jerked, her gaze snapping back to Arinda. There was a split second of confusion, and then her eyes widened.
"Arinda!"
she gasped, stepping forward and wrapping her arms around her daughter.
"I had no idea you were coming. What have you done to your hair?"
"It was a spur-of-the-moment thing, Mother,"
Arinda said, giving Gudry a triumphant smirk over her mother's shoulder. Gudry had argued that the long blonde wig over Arinda's short black hair and the darkening lenses over her blue eyes wouldn't fool anyone. Obviously, Arinda had been right.
"I heard about the trouble here and wanted to make sure you and Father were all right."
"We're fine,"
Elenia said into Arinda's shoulder.
"Though that could change at any moment."
She pulled back and held out a hand to Gudry.
I'm Elenia Price.
Matai Daw, ma'am, he said. Arinda's told me so much about you that I feel I already know you.
Arinda felt her lip curl. In fact, everything Gudri knew about her parents had been relayed in brief snatches of conversation aboard the transport. Dialogue that had consumed maybe 15 minutes of their time together. The rest of the voyage from Tanagra had been spent in silence, as Gudri buried himself in schematics, maps, and the latest ISB dispatches.
We need to talk, Mother, she said. Is Father in?
Yes, of course. Come in, come in.
A minute and another round of hugs later, the four of them were seated together in the living room.
So, what's going on out there?
Talmor asked.
Did you come here to talk to the governor about fixing this mess?
Unfortunately, Governor Ristos
doesn't listen much to anyone,
Arinda said, running a critical eye over her father. He'd aged considerably in the weeks since their last holocall, with his face more lined, his eyes more careworn, and his posture slumping.
In fact, I'm here very unofficially, which is why the hair and the eyelids is... Aside from making sure you two are safe, we need your help. A friend of Matai's may be inside the mine area, and we need your help to find him and get him out.
Oh, he's in there all right, Gudri said with just the right mix of concern and embarrassment. He's just the type to jump into something like this without thinking. I need to find him and get him out before the whole thing goes up.
Let's hold on just a minute here, Talmor said. First of all, there's no one in the mine who isn't there of his or her own free will. They're fighting for people's rights against a repressive and dangerous government.
Arinda felt a knot form in her stomach. Thrawn had wondered which side her parents would be on in the standoff. At the time, Arinda had reflexively defended their loyalty. To hear her father talking like this...
I think you may be painting with too wide a brush, she put in. The Empire is quite multifaceted.
Maybe on Coruscant it is,
Elenia said.
Maybe on Lothal, not on Baetan. Here the governor and his friends are... Well, I'll just say it. They're corrupt, Arinda. Utterly corrupt. And the galaxy needs to hear about it.
Arinda began to breathe again. So, it was just the local politics that were the problem? She could handle that.
I'll look into it when I get back to Lothal, she promised. I can petition the Senate, possibly even the Emperor. There are procedures for that kind of thing.
Yes, there are,
Talmor said grimly.
They're called revolution. I understand your concerns about your friend Matai, but there's really nothing you can do.
And I'm perfectly willing to accept that, Gudri said. But I need to hear that from him. I've heard too many stories about people being press-ganged by pirates and insurgent groups. And yes, I know most of them are probably apocryphal. But I need... He swallowed hard. I just need to hear it from him.
So we're going in, Arinda said. You don't have to take us if you don't want to. But it would help if you could call ahead to someone you know.
Talmor sighed.
You'll never get through the cordon without me. Fine. I'll take you. What's your friend's name?
Who knows? Gudri said. I mean, he hasn't always been on the right side of the law, if you get my meaning. I knew him as Blaze Jonu, but I don't know what he's using here.
That's helpful,
Talmor said with a touch of sarcasm.
Will you at least recognize him if you see him?
Absolutely, Gudri assured him. And he's a weapons electronics guy, so that should give us a clue as to where they might have him working.
Okay,
Talmor said, snagging his jacket from a coat tree by the door.
We'll go in and take a quick look around. But if and when they tell us to leave, we leave. Clear?
Clear, Arinda said. Before we go, I need to use the restroom.
Okay,
Talmor said.
You remember where it is?
Unless you and Mother have moved it, Arinda said with a tight smile. I'll be right back. She was, too. But on the way to the restroom was the kitchen, and her mother's handbag hanging by its strap, as usual, on a peg behind the door. Out of sight of the others, Arinda opened the side pouch, hoping fervently that her mother hadn't changed her calm make and model since the last time she'd visited. But her mother was a creature of habit, and to Arinda's relief, the calm was the same one she'd had before. Quickly, Arinda swapped it out for the identical one she'd brought from Coruscant, then continued on to the restroom. It would have been nice to simply borrow the calm without bothering with the switch, but she didn't dare risk it. If her mother noticed it was missing, she'd use a finder ping to locate it, and that could bring up awkward questions at the wrong time and place. This way, unless Elenia decided to make a call, her calm's disappearance shouldn't be noticed. Gudry was still going on about his missing friend when Arinda rejoined them.
Ready?
Talmor asked.
Ready,
Arinda confirmed.
Thanks, Father.
You're always welcome,
Talmor said.
All right, let's do this.
The Terminator line had passed Paragosto City. The sky over the enemy stronghold at Creek Path was darkening with the approach of night. It was time. Thrawn's office was quiet, filled with the same twilight the insurgents below were experiencing. Surrounding him were holograms of Baitanese art, hovering like messengers from the past. Each piece speaking to the ethos, attitudes, and modes of thinking of the people and culture that had created it. Shape and flow, color and texture, style and medium, it all spoke to him. Even such factors as the type of art and the reputed value of the pieces offered clues as to how the people would act and react in warfare. Unfortunately, with this kind of insurgency, the patterns weren't as clear as a simple planetary uprising would be. Most of those under Night Swan's leadership were Baitanese, but there would be others who had journeyed here to join their cause. Those outside elements would distort and dilute the patterns laid out by the art. Ideally, he would have had time for a more leisurely, more focused study of the enemy, but there was no more time. Scrim Island had been a diversion. Something loud and obvious with which Night Swan had helped to hold Imperial attention while he gathered his forces and weaponry under Creekpath's protective shield. Most likely, he had expected the island's recapture to persuade the Empire that Baton was no longer a threat, leaving him time for further preparation after they withdrew. But for once, he'd miscalculated. His time was coming to an end, along with the Baton insurgency. It was Thrawn's responsibility to do everything in his power to ensure it ended in the best possible way. His desk comm was already set to the proper frequency.
Yes?
A woman answered.
This is Admiral Thrawn aboard the ISD Chimera. I wish to speak to Night Swan. There was a pause.
Excuse me?
The woman said.
Her voice holds disbelief and astonishment. This is Admiral Thrawn, Thrawn repeated. Please inform Night Swan that I wish to speak with him.
This time the pause was longer.
One moment.
It was 40 seconds before the comm came active again.
This is Night Swan,
the familiar voice said.
His tone holds caution, but little surprise.
How did you get this frequency?
It was one of many contained in the records of the freighter Commander Vanto and I took from your nomad.
Ah,
Night Swan said.
His voice now holds dark humor within the caution.
Careless of whoever flew that ship last. Well, with anyone else I'd expect an ultimatum, or at least some gloating. But neither strikes me as your style. Why did you call?
I wish to speak with you.
We are.
Together, face to face, with no barriers between us. There is a quiet snort.
Certainly. Do you want to come to my heavily armed camp, or shall I come to yours?
There is a field 2 kilometers northeast of the Creek Bath facility, Thrawn said. It includes a ridge of low hills that block it from casual observation, but is easily accessible from your camp. Another pause.
You're serious, aren't you?
Night Swan said. His voice holds confusion.
You really want me to come there? Out from under the shield?
If it would make you feel more comfortable, I will arrive first, Thrawn offered. As you know, I have a civilian freighter, one that would not draw undue attention.
You'll have guards, of course.
I will order them to stay with the freighter and out of firing distance. Be assured that I do not seek your death.
Just my capture?
You misunderstand, Thrawn said. Your value to me cannot be realized by your capture. It certainly cannot be realized by your death.
You've piqued my curiosity,
Night Swan said. Caution, but also a rising interest.
What is my value to you?
I will only speak of it face to face, Thrawn said. I will not discuss it in a calm conversation.
I see.
Another pause.
You say you don't want to kill me. I like that part. What makes you think I won't kill you?
Because you value life, Thrawn said. Because I am the only guarantee that the civilians crowded within your stronghold will not be slaughtered. Should others lead the attack, they will almost certainly kill everyone and destroy everything in their path. You do not want that.
I didn't ask the civilians to come here,
Night Swan said. There is fresh pain and anger and resentment.
Some I couldn't help. The ones whose homes are under the shield. But the others, I asked them not to come. But we couldn't keep them out.
I understand, Thrawn said. I also understand that you see that burden the way I would see it. A pledge to do all in my power to prevent unnecessary deaths. That is why I know you will allow me to return to the Chimera in peace.
The pause this time was longer. Nearly 11 seconds. A reading of expression and body stance would be useful, but the connection was only audio. If Night Swan accepted his invitation, a more complete reading would be possible.
As I say, curiosity,
Night Swan said.
All right, why not? The northeast field. When?
I will be there in 1 hour. You may arrive at your convenience.
1 hour. I'll be there.
It took some fancy talking on Talmor's part, but eventually he, Arinda, and Gudry were allowed through the mine's outer perimeter.
There were no personal transports in sight, but Talmor assured them the central part of the complex was only another kilometer inward, and they set off on foot. And as they did, as Arinda had expected him to, her father launched into a monologue of Creekpath's recent history.
The irony is that the governor has himself to blame for the fact that we've got a shield at all,
he said, as they stepped out of the way of a speeder truck heading inward, its cargo bay loaded with boxes. Arinda squinted as the vehicle went past, caught the words, Macrid String, on the sides.
When the trouble started on Dinash, Creekpath's owners pleaded with him for some protection. All he really wanted was a couple hundred troops to beef up his checkpoints. But the governor wanted to save all the soldiers for his own protection. So instead he found a used DSSO2 regional